Did you know that someone is diagnosed with blood cancer like leukemia every 3 minutes? For many of those patients, a marrow transplant is their only hope for survival. Who will you save? Join Be the Match Registry today at youcouldbethecure.org.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Startup Radio. This is Charles Mudd. I am your host for Startup Radio. And I have today a guest, Sean McClinton, Principal of Space to Travel Consulting. Glad to have you with us, Sean. How are you?
Good, Charles. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm really excited about this particular conversation because, I started Startup Radio 5 years ago talking to individuals, men, women, entrepreneurs, people that, had a passion and translated that passion into a startup, a business. But, you know, today, particularly your area right now, space to travel consulting, and the announcement of finding 7 new planets, I guess, Earth-sized planets, NASA released today. I'm really excited about talking about where you think that space is going and where you hope to see it go in the future. But before we get to that point, I want to take a step back and, you know, you have quite an interesting background. So for a long time, you did consulting with AGHG Consulting. Can you tell us a little bit about that and then what prompted the change or the transition to thinking outside of that and looking, I guess, up to the stars in space?
Sure. Yeah, it's all exciting stuff what's happening now. And in terms of how I guess I got to where I am in my career, AGHG Consulting, listeners won't be familiar with that name, but from a career track, I graduated with a business major and was looking for something to do and had a connection to a company in China that worked in the aloe vera industry. And so aloe vera was traditionally known, is traditionally known as a skincare product, sunburns and that kind of thing. This company was trying to take aloe vera and make and essentially popularize it as an for internal use. And so the skin cells that are on the surface of the skin are similar to what's in your esophagus and GI tract and helped with inflammation, that kind of thing. And so I went over to China and they were really a startup. At the time, I was there for their very first international container shipment and was there with the company in its mass market retail launch. So we did Walmart, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, and et cetera, et cetera. And, we really tried to position ourselves as a natural alternative to the over-the-counter heartburn medications that are very popular. And we made some great traction. Those big companies are tough competitors, but it was a great experience. And did that for about 7 years out of college and, got married, started having children and decided I'd better get something a little more stable and ended up going to Microsoft and working in sales support there in kind of their enterprise group, selling to the big accounts. Somewhere in that process, whether it was having children or getting a little bit older and further along in my career, I started to notice that something was missing. Something wasn't quite right. I think the realization, Charles, that I came to was, okay, at my age with children, I better be sure that what I'm going to do next is as closely aligned to what I am most passionate about. My interest in business goes back a long ways, growing up the son of a CPA in seeing his entrepreneurial clients and even my dad himself starting successful ventures and really kind of falling in love with that idea of, you know, starting a company that was aligned to your passions, that you could make a great living at, and you could be creative and innovative and that kind of thing. So basically, when I was in that moment, I just said, okay, what was my earliest career ambition? And I thought, you know, and when we were in kindergarten, they asked us, you know, do you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, a firefighter, you know, a policeman, or an astronaut? And I'm like, you know, I think I wanted to be an astronaut out of those five choices. I think it was pretty clear. And I went back and looked, and I have my Halloween astronaut costume picture. And I mean, I think like a lot of kids, I'm a child of the space shuttle generation. You know, the baby boomers were the Apollo generation, but I watched Challenger live on TV in first grade, and I thought, well, you know, I'm probably a little bit too old, mid-30s, early-30s actually at that time, to be a NASA astronaut and didn't have a qualifying degree, which are generally in the sciences and physics and that those types of degrees. I have a business degree, and I said, well, I wonder if there's something – I think I, you know, aimed for what was closest, and so I had been following the X Prize, which was the first commercial launch into the edge of space, human launch, that was won in 2004 by Burt Rutan and Scaled Composites, eventually licensed by Richard Branson and the Virgin Group, and became Virgin Galactic. And I basically started to kick the tires on the industry, and I went down to a conference in New Mexico called the International Symposium for Personal and Commercial Spaceflight, met the head of sales from Virgin Galactic and said, I just want to get involved in the industry. I want to do something. What can I do? And she put me in touch with actually a travel agency that could sell tickets on Virgin Galactic flights. So that was the beginning of my foray into space. And at that conference, I realized, like, you know, there's a lot of cool people in space. I mean, here are like former astronaut record holders that seem really down to earth that are like, I'm rubbing shoulders with, and I'm like, wow, this is, you know, this is the epicenter and the forefront of like maybe the coolest movement, you know, on or off the earth, for lack of a better way to say it. So I'll pause there, but yeah, that was, the beginnings of my entry.
You raised a lot of interesting, ideas and things that I'd love to ask about here. So starting first, I think it's fantastic the way that you took a step back and say, what was my earliest ambition? What was I wanting to do? And then learning, you know, remembering, I guess, recollecting that it was to be an astronaut. And then from there, kind of recognizing the absence of what you had, maybe the degree and so forth. And I don't know about you, but I'm probably not as physically fit or as young as certain people starting off in the astronaut ambition. And so it's really intriguing to me that you took that notion and you made it work. You looked at what assets you did have, the business background, and really look to get into the space. And then one of my first questions arises from where you mentioned you went to the conference and you went up, you met some people and you asked them for advice. For other entrepreneurs out there, for other startups, CEOs and people wanting to start their businesses, how receptive did you find people that you approach? Is that something that you'd recommend to others, that if there's an industry in which they want to be involved or they're starting to be involved, should they reach out to the people already there at conferences? Should they walk up and introduce themselves to those people? How receptive did you find those people, and would you recommend that to others?
Yeah, a short answer is absolutely. And I think it's played a critical role. It's not always easy because, you know, you go to these conferences and you see kind of these high-powered people who are firmly established and have, you know, a strong reputation. And here you are kind of an outsider and you can feel like you don't have a lot to offer versus, you know, these people are very busy. But I have learned and I have been taught and believe that you know, human nature is people love to feel valued, to give back, to help out, because I think all you have to do is trace a person back far enough to find when they were in exactly your shoes. For me, you know, I'm not necessarily in close contact with the head of sales for Virgin Galactic, but another person I met who I didn't mention, her name is Erica Wagner, and she's in business development at Blue Origin here in Seattle. She was, I would say, one of the two key people I met there, and she essentially went on to serve as kind of a mentor for me. I mean, helping me map the space industry. I mean, this was a number of years ago now, but we maintain regular contact, and, you know, opportunities I never would have expected continue to kind of bear fruit from that. And when I look back, I kind of ask myself, why, you know, why did she care? Why did she go out of her way? Because she was there to speak, and, you know, why did she take the time? But the bottom line is she did, and had I not just, I think it was just an email, I looked her up in the conference, and I saw she was Blue Origin, and it was in Seattle, and, you know, she responded. So maybe I got lucky, but you have to, you know, you have to try. And I think, you know, if you find somebody who isn't receptive, there's always somebody who is.
You know, and I think that those three words, maybe actually four words, you have to try. I think that's so important from my own perspective and background as well, is that if you don't try, you'll never know. If you do try and you don't get a response, or you don't hear from somebody, or you don't get admitted somewhere, whatever the case may be, whatever the circumstance, if you don't try, you're never going to know. And then on the off chance that you do try and it does work, then you're all in the better position. So I completely agree with you on that. And I think that that's kind of, I would argue, and you can tell me what your thoughts are, but I think that that's kind of one of the key elements of a successful entrepreneur or somebody that wants a startup is even getting to the point of deciding to do something. They have to have that mindset, I'm going to try it. I may not succeed, but I'm going to try it, because if I don't, I'll never know.
Sure. Yeah, I think the other point I'd make there, Charles, and this comes through experience for me in working in a number of industries and arriving in the space industry later in life and having that perspective, I think that for me, maybe it's experience. I'm not a philosophical person, but, you know, I do believe that when you find the area in business or life that you maybe are predisposed to be successful in, doors are going to open a little bit easier for you. And so, you know, it's like sales or anything. You may have to try a number of things to find those areas that do work and those people who do respond. But you can use those, I don't want to call them rejections, but maybe people who don't respond or doors that don't seem to open as maybe, you know, indicators that maybe that area is not the best fit for you. Because when I compare what's happened in the space industry with me compared to maybe in previous jobs and roles, you know, I think part of it is the space industry, but part of it is this is what I feel I meant to do and I should be doing, and I, you know, have the predisposition to do. And, you know, everybody has been very welcoming and the doors have opened easily. And I mean, lots of smart, you know, people who are very helpful in that regard. So I guess I would just encourage people to keep looking for that right fit for them.
Well, that's good advice. And talking about that right fit for you, I mean, getting to it in space, let's kind of move forward and talk about what is the fit that you now have in the space industry. And I think that there are two components, right? There's the consulting, and then there's also the space entrepreneurs. And I'll leave it to you to choose which, but I why don't we start with the consulting and what you're doing with that?
Sure. Okay, so my company is Space to Travel Consulting, and it really has two I really have two services, and it's just me. I'm essentially a solo consultant. You know, I kind of outsource as needed for help, but it's been just me. And basically, if I back up a few years to when I met the Virgin Galactic folks and got connected with the travel agency, you know, I thought space tourism was the, you know, the coolest thing, you know, in the world. And I said, I want to be a part of this movement. And so essentially formed a travel business around that concept that, okay, you know, I want to help people get to space someday. And I started to learn about the travel business and realized, okay, you know, there are still travel agents, they call themselves travel advisors, who are making money in travel. And, you know, it's something that, okay, space tourism is still a long ways off, but if it, you know, there might be a bridge there to space tourism in high-end travel. And so I got into travel consulting. So that's one branch of the business, essentially is individual travel consulting. And my aim eventually is to help people around their orbital space tourism experiences. So getting into orbit, looking down on the Earth and having that realization that the astronauts talk about, Frank White, The Overview Effect, in a book that interviews about 30 astronauts and their experiences going to space. You know, the experience, my takeaway was, it's nothing short of life-changing. And so, you know, figuring out how to do that.
Sean, if I could stop you there, because it's already fascinating. How soon do you think it will be to where that kind of orbital space tourism is actually happening? I mean, we read on the news about, you know, Virgin Galactic maybe is selling seats, or somebody selling mm-hmm. seats on a galactic flight, not yet mm-hmm. occurring, but where do you see that? Is that in the next decade? Is that the next 5 years? Where do you see that actually starting to take place?
Sure. Well, so the very first private orbital space tourism was Dennis Tito in 2001.
So it's already happened. There is somebody that's already kind of done. Okay.
Correct. Seven people have gone, one of whom has gone twice, and all of whom have paid between $20 and $40 million a ticket.
That's a bit expensive.
A going rate, of $50 million a ticket. It's a very niched. I mean, really, these are entrepreneurs who made a lot of money and exited their business and had the money to spend on a ticket, plus had the time to go to Russia to train for their space flight, because NASA wouldn't allow space tourism or space tourists on the space shuttle, nor originally in the U.S. Module of the space station. Russia took a different approach and did allow it. So, but to your question, Charles, of where I guess I see it going, you know, orbital has been here on a very small scale. Suborbital is the piece that's been getting a lot of press. And so for those listeners who don't know what that means, the edge of space is at 62 miles in altitude above our heads, and that's called the Kármán line. And a suborbital launch is a launch that will get you above the Kármán line at 62 miles, but you will not achieve enough velocity to reach orbit. So orbital velocity is about 17,500 miles an hour. So it's a whole other ball game in terms of launch vehicle and technical complexity. And so suborbital is really like, you know, Virgin Galactic is a horizontal takeoff, a horizontal landing, essentially an airplane, a mated mothership, 90-minute experience touchdown to takeoff. You're going up to about 50,000 feet where the mothership will drop the rocket plane. And the rocket plane will then carry you to the edge of space. You'll get about 4 minutes of weightlessness, and then you'll land from where you took off. And you have two big competitors in that space. You've got Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic. Virgin Galactic was the clear leader for a long time, but they had a loss of life accident December of, 15, which set them back. I wouldn't be surprised if Blue Origin leapfrogs them and becomes the first to send private suborbital tourists into space. But on the orbital side, if you listen to what Jeff Bezos and Blue Origin are saying, Jeff Bezos' vision and ambitions are fairly grand. I mean, they may not be Elon Musk's grand of colonizing Mars, but Bezos' vision, as far as I can tell, that they've said is 1 million people living and working in space. So they have several large launch vehicles in development, one of which is the New Glenn, And so that will be able to take passengers into orbit. And they just broke ground on that facility, a few months ago. And so, it's probably, it's a number of years before the first, kind of next wave of orbital space tourists, but I would expect suborbital in the next year or two to launch paying passengers.
And so does that come back to some of the consulting that you're doing now in that space and you talked about, the travel consulting and so forth working there. Is that going to translate into working to attract people that might be interested in doing that to have them purchase those tickets? How is your consulting going to fit in and work in that niche?
Sure. So really I have the two arms of my consulting business. One of them is the original, the leisure travel consulting, and essentially we use a long-term travel planning approach that is geared towards larger, longer-term bucket list experiences and planning for a longer term. Second piece is, I do corporate consulting because I have a business background in sales, marketing, and business development. And so I actually take both of those approaches. But again, it's all geared towards, how can I add value to the space industry, but with bigger visions. I mean, I subscribe to, a million people in space to look down on the earth and have that overview effect kind of experience. And I look at, similar to the way Peter Diamandis has approached, if you look at his career in the space industry, he couldn't become an astronaut because of his eyes. And he took a rising tide lifts all boats approach where he built up, he created the XPRIZE and that, kind of launched Virgin Galactic, indirectly, but so I do the corporate consulting with a couple clients, and we're trying to build the space industry here in Seattle to the kind of rising tide lifts all boats approach, and that's part of what Space Entrepreneurs does, which is the second piece of what I do.
Sure. And before we get to there, you just mentioned, you're in Seattle, and I have heard, and I'd like you to elaborate kind of on what's happening there, because it sounds like, in addition to the Cape Canaveral or California, Southern California, and now, SpaceX just launched from, of course, the historic launch site. But Seattle, the Northwest, is creating its own, seems to be, space kind of launch hub. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, Charles. We think a lot about this and what are we good at here in Seattle as opposed to other space hubs that you mentioned, Florida and Southern California and Colorado, and it goes on and on. And I think that it probably starts with Seattle's space legacy, and that ties directly into Boeing and things like the Lunar Rover being designed here. The Kent Space Center, where a lot of Boeing's early space work was done. So you've got the space legacy, and they've got Boeing itself here, though they don't do as much space work here anymore. But I think that the result of that has been a lot of people who grew up with a little bit of space legacy. I mean, you've got the Space Needle, and, it's also known as Space City, So you have a lot of people who grew up and want to be a part and remember that legacy, or were taught that legacy, without a lot of, old space, meaning Boeings and NASAs, those type of opportunities around here, but with a pent up demand. So you've got the aerospace infrastructure of Boeing and its suppliers, and then you've got the IT infrastructure with Microsoft and Amazon, and now you've got Facebook and Google and Apple, and everybody's setting up satellite offices here. So we see those two pieces as a big asset that we can kind of get bridged together to start forming the space industry. I think if you look at the culture of Seattle and the history from a startup standpoint, Seattle has been very good at incubating new industries and creating kind of industry leading companies as a result. So, actually, not a lot of people know this, but UPS started here in Seattle. It moved a number of years ago. But of course, you've got Costco and Starbucks and Amazon and Microsoft and Nordstrom. The list goes on. And so I think we feel here in Seattle that the space industry is the next great industry that Seattle will help to incubate, of course, along with the Bay Area and Southern California. But, you know, we don't have a NASA center here. We're kind of isolated in the top of the country. And, you know, some people say, okay, it's a thought leadership community. I mean, you've got Planetary Resources wanting to mine asteroids up here, and you've got Blue Origin. So I've been to the same conference in the Bay Area and in Seattle, and it's very different space cultures. But, you know, we kind of hope that we'll be able to do the same thing, that there will be, you know, one of these companies today will be the next Microsoft, and then it will spawn an ecosystem of companies and so on and so forth. So
sure. Now, you mentioned something that just now that's interesting. So there are different space cultures between where you are and in California. Is there really a difference in the dynamics between the people, I mean, in the industry, between those two locations?
I definitely think so, Charles. I mean, you know, I think you have to split California into the Bay Area and Southern California from a space standpoint. You know, I think the Bay Area has already produced the most significant true startups. I mean, I think you have to look at the space industry and separate a startup from a ultra high net individually backed startup and a a true private equity funded startup. I think the Bay Area has done the latter better. I mean, you've got Spire and Skybox and Planet, big acquisitions, big financing numbers. So the Bay Area, its culture and capital infrastructure lends itself well to that. And I think they've been on the forefront of the satellite industry, Earth observation and that kind of thing.
Right.
When you look at Southern California, Boeing has a big presence down there, and a lot of their satellite work has been down there. And Lockheed, a lot of old space presence in Southern California. And some of those facilities and talent led SpaceX to locate there. And then you have, you know, Mojave Air and Spaceport nearby and Vandenberg Air Force Base. And you have launch capacity in California, whereas you don't generally in the Bay Area or Seattle. The Bay Area and Southern California have NASA centers. So, each brings its own set.
Sure. Well, and let's talk about the setup in Seattle again, where you are in Space Entrepreneurs. How has that been doing? You started that as a kind of a networking group, bringing people together that have shared interest to kind of help build up the space industry in the Seattle area?
Yeah, that's correct, Charles. So let's see, I think we just had our 3-year anniversary, so February of 2014. And, I had been going to meetups since I was in college and had run a meetup called Bellevue Entrepreneur Meetup, which Bellevue is a suburb of Seattle, for those who don't know. And, I wasn't quite getting enough space. I mean, I realized I really like space, and, you know, I after starting the travel business and thought, you know, I want to do more. So I thought, well, I'll just throw this up there and see what happens. Our first meetup was just a few people, and I think it was 3 people on the meetup. And our very next meetup was about 80 people. And so,
no kidding. And yeah, when you say meetup, just for those that may not be familiar, you're referring to the website where it's people can find different groups of people or different organizations that have their interests, and the meetups are just gatherings scheduled that you can come participate in and talk with people that have shared interests. Is that correct?
Correct. It is the company meetup and meetup.com. So yes, that was our original platform. And, you know, the beauty of Meetup is they do essentially all the marketing. You do pay an organizer fee, but you know, they have helped us grow tremendously. So, you know, we went to, we had 80 people at the first event. We had Eric Anderson, who was the founder of one of the founders of Space Adventures, who sent those 7 paying passengers speak. And I would say we've went from periods of slow and steady growth to exponential growth, and we're at 600 members now.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think I never thought that this group would be as big as Bellevue Entrepreneur Meetup because it's more niche, but I really think it speaks to the built-in excitement here in Seattle.
And the future of the industry in that area, it's fantastic, and it's fantastic for you to be in that kind of space. You know, taking a step back with your consulting and taking that leap and making that effort to not only start the consulting business, but then also to create this meetup to get involved and associate with people in that industry, like-minded and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
What did you benefit from most, would you say, having worked previously in consulting, having worked at Microsoft? What do you think were or are the most important attributes for your success so far in doing that, and that might be shared, or that might be, that an entrepreneur should look for to help them succeed?
Sure. I guess the interest in entrepreneurship drove me to become educated in entrepreneurship, and that included, all of the networking events and seminars that I could attend on entrepreneurship. So that, I could be an entrepreneur myself and help support other entrepreneurs. And that goes back a long ways, pretty much I would say when I arrived to college, if not before. But I think, to go back to what we touched on in terms of reaching out to people, when I was in college, I think what started it, how I realized the power of reaching out to people was I went to school in San Diego and went to see a Thai event, the Indus Entrepreneurs. They had an event down near LAX and drove down there, and it was Nolan Bushnell, who is the founder of
Sure.
Atari. He spoke to a fairly small group, and here I am, 20, 21 years old, and he spoke, and I was a little bit nervous, but I went up to him afterwards, and I said, that was a really inspiring story, and it was very friendly. I was like, wow, I can, you can meet anybody you want, almost anywhere you want. I mean, we were in a little hotel conference room near LAX, seemingly a random location for, this is one of the fathers of the modern video game industry, and, he told the story of an early Atari employee who came to him asked for $50,000 for 30% of his new company, and guess what that company was?
What's that?
It was Apple. So it was Steve Jobs. Early employee of Atari, and Nolan unfortunately turned him down. He said that was one of the bigger regrets in my life, but. In any case, that kind of got me going on, okay, you can meet anybody at any time. And, I think this industry being new, it's easier to meet people. And I think with my background as a business person, you look at the space industry, it's very engineering centric, rightfully so. But I can't hold a candle when you talk about orbital mechanics or, you name it, propulsion. I'm trying to be educated but my strength, I think, is being able to connect people, know what people are good at, know who to connect them with, because, I think, a lot of these engineers are technically brilliant, but thinking of other issues that might prevent them from making their idea real. So,
yeah, and so in that effort of trying to help people and others, who is your ideal client? Who are you trying to reach out to right now? Who's your ideal customer for the, space to travel consulting?
Sure. I have a fairly tight bandwidth now based on my current client work. I would say, at some point, I would love the opportunity to work with Blue Origin. in a sales, marketing, business development capacity. You know, I think what they're doing is awesome. You know, I work with a company called RBC Signals right now, and dedicating a lot of my time to what they're trying to do, and that is really, you know, quote unquote, launch the small satellite revolution. So low cost satellites, and they're trying to address the problem of how do these companies get their data from space down to the ground. And
sure.
So there's a couple bottlenecks to, as I see it, a true explosion, you know, no pun intended, of, you know, the space, the new space movement, and cost of launch is one. And then, you know, I think making satellites useful, what are they going to do and how are they going to get their data down, are key pieces of that. So that's what I'm focused on. You know, I serve individual travel clients. You know, I think I'm looking for people who are adventurous, who are open-minded on the individual travel side, who value travel. And then, you know, on the corporate side, you know, probably any serious entrepreneur looking to make waves in the space industry, and probably looks at space as much as an economic opportunity, and because it's a movement.
Sure. And it sounds like it's an exciting movement, not only nationwide, but particularly in your region there in the Northwest, particularly Seattle. It sounds like it's just a fantastic place to be immersed. And so if somebody were wanting to join, like, your next meetup or to be a part of Space Entrepreneurs, what do they have to do for that? Where do they go, and how often do you meet?
Sure. So we still use Meetup as our primary platform. And so if you're on Meetup or if you're not on Meetup, you just search Space Entrepreneurs. If you're not in the Seattle area, you want to make sure that your you know, location radius is wide enough to find us, because a Meetup will tailor it to your physical location. So if you're not in the area but want to kind of keep tabs, or if you find yourself in Seattle from time to time, you can join. It's free. We meet at least monthly, sometimes twice a month. And, yeah, so we meet on a variety of topics and event types.
That sounds exciting, and I wish that I was actually closer in physical proximity so I could participate as well. But there's another way of obviously communicating and so forth. And if someone were wanting to reach out to you, you know, where can they find out what's going on with you? I see you have quite a number of followers on LinkedIn. How did you get so many followers? Or was that just a surprise one morning?
Yeah, no, I think that again goes back to the reaching out thing. And, you know, I think I would like to know as many people in the space industry as I can, so that once I start publishing content more regularly, you know, I will be able to help more people. And so, I mean, a lot of that is organic growth, just going out and networking. And then, you know, you get a business card and you add it to LinkedIn.
Sure.
When you get home. And some of that is, okay, well, this is a second degree friend, or this person is in the strategic role at this company, and adding them and see if they accept. And, you know, some people, there are different philosophies there, but I tend to like a wider network in that sense. And so,
have you found people that reached out to you through LinkedIn?
Yeah, I would say I do more of the reaching out, but certainly, you know, I haven't had a lot of people reach out directly through LinkedIn, but I have made some incredible connections with astronauts, former astronauts on LinkedIn. I mean, I was
really
chatting. Yeah, I was chatting with Story Musgrave the other day, and I, you know, I often have to pinch myself thinking, like, am I really doing this? Is this really who I'm talking to? And Michael Lopez Alegria, you know, he's the American record holder for spacewalks. You know, I was able to contact him and talk to him about events here in Seattle, and So, yeah, I have a number of astronaut, first-degree astronaut connections, and part of that's kind of for fun, but part of that is, you know, these are real connections that and people I'm talking to, and so, yeah.
And it goes back, you just have to try, right? You reach out and you connect, and you never know who, they're only human on the other side, and you never know who you might end up connecting to. We do have some people listening, and one of the questions that's come in for you, if I can read it here, is how long did it take for you to take, you know, to begin with your idea, wanting to shift, wanting to pivot, as the term is often used, from where you were to the new industry, being in the space industry? So how long did it take you to move from your idea and then going to the industry conference and being excited to actually having your business up and running?
Sure. So I think I have tried to go back and map this kind of path and trajectory. And, you know, I went to an entrepreneur magazine conference in Miami, Florida in 2009. And I met Ivan Meisner, founder of BNI, Business Network International. And he gave a speech and he talked about knowing Richard Branson personally. So I'm like, okay, you know, at that point I thought, okay, maybe he can help me get a job at Virgin Galactic. And he did put me in touch with, I think, the head of HR for Virgin Galactic at the time. This was before I went to that conference. And at the time they said, well, we're a small team in London, you know, we're not really hiring. But as far as I can tell, that was when I was first starting to think seriously about getting into the industry to where I am now. I'm essentially full-time, you know, in the industry. I mean, I kind of live, eat, sleep, and breathe space. And so, but it has not been it's been a gradual increase and a realization and, you know, due diligence and forming a mission and vision statement and that kind of thing. So,
do you think that it turned into, you know, you mentioned one of the impetus or an impetus for your kind of thinking about where you wanted to go, where you wanted to be, was your family. And has that worked to your advantage then? Or have you found, as many people in the startup, you know, starting a new business, being an entrepreneur, it often takes more time away from other things that they'd like to be doing. So how has that played out in your transition?
Sure. That's a good question. I would say that having children did serve as a catalyst to ask the question, you know, what do I want to do with my life that will be most meaningful? You know, I think maybe if I was only thinking about myself, I don't know, you know, I don't know what life would have been like, but, you know, I think wanting to set an example led me to think about that question or to think more seriously about that question as opposed to just, well, I may do that someday, especially at my age. Now my wife works full time and I work full time and we have three children all under eight. And so it's certainly, we don't have a lot of extra time. And could I have accelerated my path? Maybe, though, if you look at space, traditional historical space industry development, it's, you know, it's often a multi-year proposition. And so, you know, that slow development of the industry has allowed me to kind of position myself and think about how to add value and where to position myself and that kind of thing. So,
yeah. And I think that, you know, going to the children factor, I have children of my own as well. And I think there's a cool factor, at least from my perspective, a cool factor in what you're doing, right? That you are, that you stepped out, that you're doing what you're passionate about, and space is cool. And I have to give you credit on that. And I think that in the end, you know, our kids, they do look up to us and they see us as examples. And I think it's really, a great thing what you've done, and that you're having the success and that you're out there and following your passion. Here's another question that we've received, somebody. What was the biggest challenge you faced in your career so far, and how did you address it, and assuming that you did overcome it, how did you overcome it?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty simple, but a great question. And that is, how do you make money at what you're passionate about? And, you know, how do you make money in the new space industry? And I think, you know, when I look at what I have done and the path I've taken and the path that others are trying to take who are, you know, maybe just getting started, for example, somebody right out of college, you know, in the new space industry, you have a small amount of companies, you have listed employment opportunities, which I think are the tip of the iceberg, and then you have everything else. And when an industry like this is being built, the opportunities aren't always seen or obvious and have to be developed in alternative methods. So, for example, you know, my original approach was to try to work for Virgin Galactic, and, you know, they didn't have any opportunities. Maybe they do now. I don't know. But instead of saying, okay, well, there just isn't anything here for me, there was, and I forget who said it, but it's, you know, if you can't find a way, make one. And so I thought, okay, if I'm an entrepreneur, and I think I am, and I want to be, you know, that's the approach I should take here. And so instead of saying, okay, well, there isn't any traditional employment, there's no way to make money, I'll kind of plant these seeds. And that approach has worked where, you know, all the opportunities I've gotten are not listed, are not obvious, but certainly are there. And I firmly believe that there's plenty, from what I've heard, of additional opportunity that could be capitalized on by the right person. But trying to make money when you have a family. I mean, if you're young, maybe that's not such an issue. You can experiment a little bit more. But
with the family, you've got those responsibilities. You not only have to balance the pursuit of the passion, but to make sure that the food's on the table, right? And
exactly.
It's great when it's great too, as you've described. You know, speaking from my own experience, it's great when we have a spouse who's also working, that we're all contributing to the team, because, you know, I certainly do appreciate that. I couldn't do what I do without the support there of the whole family. And I'm sure that it's helped having that support with your spouse working as well, in terms of allowing you to build this, because it you're right. If you're younger, single, male or female, you have more ability to accept risk in going out and pursuing things, which is all the more admirable then that you have done this, because it's that much more difficult, I think, as we get older, we get more responsibilities with our family, our children, our spouses want our, you know, have time expectations for us. I hear completely where you're coming from.
Yeah, and I would add, Charles, you brought up a good reminder. Yes, I would not be able to do this without my wife. If you're listening, Yuri, thank you. And I love you for that. And, you know, I think that what's been also rewarding along those lines is my daughter, I think, has met 3 astronauts.
Oh, cool.
You know,
that's
my wife
so
has
cool.
Met, yeah, I think a couple. I think I've met in person like 8 or 10. And, you know, I've emailed with a number of others. But, you know, that's been fun. You know, I thought I didn't meet an astronaut until I was, I don't know how old, but you know, my wife the other day finally said, you know, I kind of like space. It's really, it's very diverse. It's very international. And so, you know, being able to bring those benefits home has been really rewarding. So,
well, talking about bringing experiences home, you know, one of the last questions that I have for you, and then I want to open it up to anything else that you'd like to share, but are there any particular books, or are there any particular people in particular resources that you've particularly found guiding or helpful, or something that you would recommend to somebody else, or that's been inspirational? Is there a book like that for you?
I read a lot. I listen. I don't read very much. I listen to a lot of books, and I listen to a lot of space related books. So,
well, what's one of the best space related books that you've listened to then?
Yeah, I think for the average listener, Mike Massimino, he's a former NASA astronaut. His book called Spaceman. You know, we met him, my wife and I met him, and his book, he's got a PhD, he's from New York, but he is one of the most, like, down-to-earth, humble, funny, you know, well-spoken people, and he has some incredible stories from, you know, how he made it to NASA from his childhood, and then his experiences in space, working on Hubble. I mean, it's just, it's a very easy listen. So that I found that super inspirational and entertaining, which is sometimes a rare combination when you're listening to astronaut biographies. But yeah, that's on the space side. I loved Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, Forpreneur, a startup inspiration. I mean, just, you know, clawing and scratching and getting out there and just running with, you know, no pun intended, with a crazy idea. So,
well, those are two good recommendations that I think that we should all probably go out and put either on our bookshelf, well, read first and then put on the bookshelf, or load into the Kindle or Audible format, as the case may be. Is there anything that you would like? I really appreciate you being a part of the show here, Sean. Is there anything that you'd like to share with the listeners, you know, whether it's live now or they can continue to listen to the broadcast, as many people do later on, that you want to share, or that you found particularly important in your relaunch of your career into space?
Sure. I would just say, Charles, that, you know, traditionally, you know, I'm going to make a plug for space. Space has traditionally been almost the sole domain of government and science fiction. And, you know, I think space by nature is vast and expensive and dangerous, and, you know, things that don't allow people to really think about space in a practical context. But when you think about your everyday life, I mean, GPS and internet and all of the space technologies that we use in our daily lives, most of them we're not really aware of, and how much space influences our lives in terms of how, you know, the government space program, meaning NASA, has developed those and how they have benefited us. And just think about what private industry will be able to do in that context, and then what that means for the individual. I mean, if you think about space and you liked science fiction growing up, or you were inspired by the moon landing, or whatever it might be, just take another look at that and see if, you know, there might be a more practical application for that idea than you thought. Because I think you look at Elon wanting to get 1 million people to colonize Mars. I mean, space traditionally was this, you know, the sole domain of, you know, the 500 people who have ever gone, but one day it's going to be for everyone. And, you know, it's going to be more like Star Trek, where going to space is not, you know, it's a little bit more taken for granted and a little more accessible. So I feel that now is the time to kind of start thinking about what is it going to mean to be, you know, in my life.
You couldn't have said it better. I think that space is a wonderful frontier, and the way that you just described it, it's going to be more accessible to so many more of us, particularly as you've talked today about Jeff Bezos' idea of, I think you said, you know, his ambition of a million, a colony, or a place of a million out there in space living. Of course, Elon Musk talking about Mars and moving beyond the government to really, and I would hope that it becomes a global endeavor. I mean, we see that with people going to the International Space Station, and that it is an international endeavor there. And it sounds like from the community that you've described with space entrepreneurs in Seattle and that hub, but generally the space community is really international and cooperative in nature, human potential, there's no limit. So I'm excited to see where that goes, and I'm actually excited to also see how your business endeavors proceed over the next several months, year, and I'd love to have you back, Sean. It's really been a pleasure to have you on Startup Radio.
Great, Charles. I very much appreciate you having me, and it's great to talk space, and happy to come back on, and hope that I will continue to have good news to report, and always happy to update folks on what's happening in the space world.
I look forward to coming back. That sounds great. And to all of our listeners, this is Startup Radio. It's part of the STEM Daddy and Network. I'd like to mention our two sister shows, Gaming Chords, talking about the gaming industry, and STEM Voices, those voices in the STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And that kind of overlapped in our discussion today, of course, with Sean McClinton of Space to Travel Consulting and Space Entrepreneurs, a meetup, Space Entrepreneurs meetup. You can join them in the Seattle area. Please check that out. I'd also like to thank our producer, Lindsey Kramer, and of course the music that I begin and end the show with and have for going on 5 years, Diana Raines, So Sexy Low Fade, one of our favorite musicians here. Sean, again, thanks so much. I wish you a great week, and I'll look forward to having you again.
Great. Thank you, Charles. Talk to you soon.
Napa Know-How. A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa Know-How, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.